In Syria today, troops fired on residents trying to block tanks surrounding the city of Hama, killing at least six. A Syrian boxer, a 2004 Olympic medal winner, was wounded there yesterday. In Libya, the rebels trying to oust Muammar Gaddafi say his forces are stepping up their efforts to thwart their march on Tripoli. And in Egypt, where pro-democracy protesters succeeded in forcing the resignation of President Hosni Mubarak last February, tensions are still running high. As the so-called Arab Spring moves into summer, a question: how do these uprisings square with the conventional thinking of academics like Samuel Huntington, who in his 1996 book Clash of Civilizations argued that Muslims don't share the Western yearning for freedom? Our next guest says they upend that thinking and that this yearning comes from the same source of inspiration that drove the Puritans. Let's spend some time today with Bruce Feiler, the Walking the Bible guy. He's traced a lot of things back to Moses and Abraham, just as he does in his new book, Generation Freedom, the Middle East Uprisings and the Remaking of the Modern World. He joins us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin. It's always nice to be with you.
And let's just get right to some of the encounters that you had. You went sort of as the uprisings were, well, we're still rather quite up in Egypt. Mubarak had stepped down. You went and retraced some of the steps that you'd taken for other books, but this time to speak to people in the opposition. And you met many Muslims who, unprompted, would tell you, for instance, the story of Moses leading these Israelites to the Promised Land. Give us an example. For instance, you speak to a Sufi man, a Sufi mystic. You know, the Sufis, as you write, the third pillar of Islam, the Sunni, the Shia, the Sufi. And you ask him, when you see a miracle like this, the uprising, what does it remind you of? And he tells you the story of Moses.
That's exactly what happened on this night. I was in a bazaar in the middle of Cairo, this very mystical man. I had spent, as you were kind enough to mention, 15 years of my life walking around the Middle East, retracing the Bible for Walking the Bible, Abraham. And if I learned anything during that time, Robin, it's that what happens over there is intimately connected to what happens here. So suddenly we were witnessing the biggest tumultuous event in the region in my lifetime, and I wanted to go back and be a part of it. So I went back, I marched with these young protesters, sat with the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, and sought out all these different people. And I wanted to talk to a Sufi in particular because they're not really invested in this rivalry between Sunni and Shia. And I went to see this man, very mystical, in this middle of this bazaar. He's pulling out money and change and giving it to beggar after beggar and needy person after needy person. It was truly inspiring. And he was giving me his sort of story and analysis of what was going on. And then I said, so, you know, what did this remind you of? And he goes right to the story of Moses. And that is the story of freedom in the Bible. And what he was talking about is this wonderful twist on it, which is we often think about in the biblical story, the Israelites stand up to the forces of tyranny in the Pharaoh, but it's the Israelites, Moses leads them across the Red Sea, they leave. In the story that just happened in Egypt, it's the inverse of that, right? So Pharaoh got kicked out, all these signs comparing Mubarak to the Pharaoh in the middle of Tahrir Square in the height of the revolution. Pharaoh got kicked out and literally went to Sinai, and it was Moses that stayed behind. And that really, I think, is what's so important and ultimately, I think, inspiring about this story, which is that now freedom, which is this idea that began in the Middle East, has finally come home to try to save the Middle East.
As he said to you, if Mubarak was the Pharaoh, the whole Egyptian people were Moses. But again, as you said, in an inverse, they didn't leave. They kicked out the Pharaoh. And then you also spoke with someone in the Muslim Brotherhood. A lot of fear about the Muslim Brotherhood being perhaps a more fundamentalist group, perhaps wanting to take Egypt backwards now to a more fundamentalist religious country. But this man also shares with you a story about Moses. And this was when he was a student in the 1980s.
This man, Mohammed Bultagi, is the head of the political arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. And he told me this story that he also had used this Moses story to give him inspiration. I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood began in the 1920s. And for the first 20 years or so of its existence was expressly, aggressively violent. The first really to talk about jihad as being an aggressive political movement. They teamed with the Nazis, had 2 million people by the end of the the 1940s. But then they were really actively repressed by Nasser and subsequent leaders. And in the 70s, they nominally at least changed tactics and said, we're going to embrace gradual political change. And the big question in the world today is basically, do they mean what they say and what's going to happen to the Muslim Brotherhood? So this man had joined. He was a medical doctor. He joined when he was a teenager. And he told this story about how he went back to speak to the young medical students and talked about the same story. And the reason that the Muslim Brotherhood, that he relied on this story, is because in the Quran, the emphasis is somewhat different from the Bible. In the Bible, all the emphasis is on Moses and freedom and these people on the side of the right and the good and the community. In the Quran, really the big emphasis is on the Pharaoh as being the evil one. And so he was talking to his people saying, you have to align yourself with the side of the good. Don't be involved in the corruption and real sinful interpretation of having too much power. Stick with the side of the pure religious values.
He tells the story as it's related in the Quran as Moses going to the Pharaoh and asking the Pharaoh to follow the path of God. And the Pharaoh says to Moses, well, wait a minute. What about the food and the security and the kindness that, you know, you've been shown? In other words, it's sort of the parallel to a Mubarak saying, wait, but I you know, took care of your needs. Moses's response, according to this member of the Muslim Brotherhood, is that all means nothing if there is no freedom.
And freedom is, in a lot of ways, at the core of what this is really about. I mean, the reason that I called my book Generation Freedom is that it is this generation that is really the key ingredient. 1 billion Muslims around the world are under 30 years old. That's two-thirds of all Muslims. If you want to understand the importance of figuring out a way for the different religions to get along today, which you and I have spoken about many times over the years, consider this fact that 1 in 7 human beings alive today is a Muslim under 30. We have to get this right. This young generation freedom, as I call them, they're plentiful, but they're also pinched because they're much more educated than their parents, and yet there's no job opportunities. And so what they have become now, they're plugged in, but they really are proactive. I met this 23-year-old woman. She wears a veil. She's written 2 books about Islam. She's an anchor on television. She was in a reality television show modeled on Donald Trump's Apprentice. And she said to me, if I would put one word on this generation, it would be awakening. So they are now saying, we want these rights that other people have. And I think that what's really important about this is that for the last 30 years, the only narrative for change that has been offered to these young people has been the fundamentalists. Let's go back to the 12th century. And now another narrative of change has emerged. We now have 2 players on the field, so to speak, battling for the hearts and minds of Generation Freedom.
Bruce Feiler, his new book, Generation Freedom, The Middle East Uprisings and the Remaking of the Modern World. In it, he reminds us that the idea of freedom was born in the Middle East in the story of Moses. He's written before and spoken to us before about how Moses also inspired the Puritans, the Founding Fathers, and Martin Luther King, who spoke about reaching the Promised Land. But Bruce, if this is a story that, as you just said, is also in the Quran, and it took place pretty much on that soil, how was this anti-Pharaoh, freedom-loving story lost for so many decades in the Middle East?
I think what happened in the Middle East was you had this unholy alliance, if you will, between the dictators in power and the people. And basically the dictators in power said, we will subsidize your food, we'll give you subsidized jobs, and in return, you don't ask any questions about where our power comes from and what we're actually doing with it. What's happened now is that entire formula has been eliminated. What is the reason that the Moses story inspired so many generations of Americans over the years? The answer is, once you have a direct relationship with the story, you realize that there's a higher calling than the people above you. So what's higher than the King of England? The answer is God. What's higher than the slave master if you're in the South? Answer, God. What's higher than Jim Crow if you're Martin Luther King? Answer, God. And so the same thing, they took inspiration from these stories. One of the things that drove me back to Egypt was this idea we were all being told, it's Revolution 2.0, right? Hashtag Jan 25 is this generation's give me liberty or give me death. Well, guess what? It's not just that. In fact, Revolution 2.0 is not all that different from Revolution 1.0. And this story began here. And finally, they were so squeezed and so frustrated, had learned so much on the internet, and finally decided, we're going to be proactive. That's the word I kept hearing, proactive. What's important about being proactive? A Muslim by nature. The word means one who submits. They said, we're no longer going to submit.
Well, and you give tremendous examples of seeing that. You go to climb the pyramids, which you'd done, you know, years ago, and you get stopped by a security officer who asks you for a bribe, and your Egyptian companion says, no, this is the new Egypt. We don't do that anymore. And the officer slinks away. but I just want to make sure we hear what you're saying, because when you say they now realize there's a higher power than the pharaoh, Mubarak, was this a religious revolution? Was it secular? What was it?
Generation Freedom opens, as you know, on the day Mubarak stepped down. It was the 18th day of the revolution, Friday, February 11. 1.2 million people had crammed into the square because they were so frustrated he hadn't stepped down the night before. In the morning, there was a Christian mass. The Muslims locked arms to protect the Christians. And at dusk, the call to prayer sounds. What seems like half of Egypt stops, does the prayer in the direction of Mecca. In the middle of the prayer, the vice president, Omar Suleiman, rises to the screens that are all over Tahrir Square, announces in a two-sentence statement that Mubarak is going to step down. The way that story has always been told, there's this big whooping cheer. But that's not actually really what happened. The people who were praying continued to pray. Even as their prayers are being met around them, they continue for 3.5 more minutes until they finish. And then this big guttural cheer rises up. I'm free. I am free. I believe that this story has roots in the Islamic tradition. It has roots, time and again, people said, in the same stories that inspired the West. I think that Islam is very powerful and has a very strong voice in the Middle East. But there is an important distinction that we must be able to hear in this country, and that is the distinction between being Islamic and being Islamist. In every poll available, support for extremism has plummeted. There is less interest in that way to solve the problem. So I think that we have to accept they are Muslim and that they are interested in Islam, but we have to understand that just because of that doesn't mean that violent extremism is suddenly going to be rained down around the world.
Yeah. You speak to an academic, I think is the way to describe him, Dr. Sabit?
Yes, Sabit.
Yes, Sabit. And he says to you, you know, the word freedom doesn't even have a precise equivalent in Arabic. And that freedom as a concept isn't central to the Quran, but what is central is the idea, it's sort of a parallel idea, of not being a slave. And he says the best form of jihad is to tell truth to an oppressive ruler. But you still press him on, there is a sense in the West that the idea of Islam and freedom are incompatible, that Muslims wouldn't know how to handle freedom if you got it. You know, these are your words. He's offended by that.
He says, we're not Burkina Faso. He says to me, we are not a place that's never had any example of freedom. And he talked about two different periods in Islamic history. One going back to the second century after Islam was founded, when there was a period of great openness and experimenting with freedom. Then it went underground, as he admits to me, for centuries, for almost an entire millennium. But beginning in the 19th century, there were many movements, particularly in Egypt, to form a constitution. And his message to me was that we have a tradition and that we're not trying to invent the union of freedom and Islam. We're just trying to tap back into a tradition that's always been there. We know that scripture has rival threats. We know you can read the Bible to be open and tolerant to other people. We know you can read the Bible to be exclusivist, promote slavery, and to be very unwelcoming of other people. There's always this tension. And I think that one of the great takeaways that I've taken away from the Arab Spring is there is a similar tension going on in Islamic tradition, and even, and maybe even more important, right now, that is a living, breathing tension on the ground of countries in the Middle East. Yeah. And so we began by talking about the clash of civilizations. We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. It had become conventional wisdom in this country that Muslims don't care about individuality, pluralism, or the idea of freedom, and they couldn't tolerate it if they got it. I believe that that idea is now dead. And if we don't support them, they might be overrun by the opposition, and that's why I think in the end the choice is ours. Are we going to get involved and help? Are we going to continue to turn our back on the people who are asking us, we want the same thing that you want?
That's Bruce Feiler. His new book is Generation Freedom, The Middle East Uprisings and the Remaking of the Modern World. Bruce, thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.